Terrible Tommy knows, and we're here at the bunker in Warsaw, Indiana, 46581, on a overcast day, and not a lot of sun today, but it's up in the 30-something, so that's it. This is the 29th of January, 2015. I think you've got one more day to get it done. If you haven't done it by then, you'll never get it done at this date, I'll tell you that. We're here right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station, where we only sell Ethel and regular. Yes. We sell it at 50 cents a gallon, which undercuts everybody. Ha ha, we fooled those Arabs. And while you're filling your tank, you can go into the restaurant and have a few beers. Yeah, and I'll serenade you with my karaoke singing. Yeah, everybody comes from miles around to hear it. And when you get done drinking and loading up with your gasoline, you can go back to the weapons of mass destruction equipment yard, where we bring them in from all over the world, where Uncle Samuel leaves them setting just to rust up, and if we don't get them, ISIS gets them. So anyhow, we're going to have a lot of them available for you come spring, but of course we're closed in the winter. The yard is closed, and we use that time to pull them into the big barn and repaint them and putty up the bullet holes and all that kind of stuff, and get some different coats of paint on them. Yeah. The women, a lot of times they want pink. So we've got quite a few weapons of mass destruction painted pink here. So you can look forward to spring and when we open up, and you can drive your 18-wheelers down here from wherever you're coming from. Pick up a great big weapon of mass destruction and tote it on home and hide it in the woods or something. Or in a cave someplace, yeah. But when you come down here, pull your 18-wheelers off the side of the road, because my neighbors can't get by if you don't. And we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And you can make your checks to White Aryan Resistance or The Insurgent or Tom Metzger. And that'll get her done. But since you're used to putting on The Insurgent, that's fine too, but you can put my name on there, Tom Metzger, and that'll go through the big old bank too. One more reminder on this email, that whenever you send me in, whether it's PayPal or in an envelope, you need to put your email address in there. You don't even have to put your own name and address, because we don't keep those. We cut those up and throw them away, man. So just make sure, though, your email's in there. And also would help me out quite a bit if you put on the month you're donating for, because some guys wait a little long and send it in at the end of the month sometimes, and we let it sort of slide, but I get confused, and I'm not sure whether that's for the next month or the month that's just passed by. So always put the letter. Like if it's February, put an F in there, or just put February, and let me know so I can keep my records straight. Because, boy, I'll tell you, I'm hell on wheels with records. Boy, oh boy, here's a knee slapper. Law enforcing agencies on January the 22nd claimed that they had arrested Al Salafi, along with his two companions, during a joint raid in Lahore. However, sources revealed that Al Salafi was actually arrested sometime in December last year, and it was only disclosed on January 22nd. Pony Express. Quote, during the investigations, Yusuf Al Salafi revealed that he was getting funding routed through America to run the organization in Pakistan and recruit young people to fight in Syria. A source privy to the investigations revealed to the Daily Express on the conditions of anonymity. Al Salafi is a Pakistani Syrian who entered Pakistan through Turkey 5 months ago. Earlier, it was reported that he crossed into Turkey from Syria and was caught there. However, he managed to escape from Turkey and reached Pakistan to establish ISIS in the region. Wow. Sources said al-Salafi's revelations were shared with U.S. Secretary Dumbass John Kerry during his recent visit to Islamabad. Quote, the matter was also taken up with CENTCOM Chief General Lloyd Austin during his visit to Islamabad earlier in the month, a source said. Well, there you go. Getting money funneled through the good old U.S. banks, just like did the Bolsheviks back when they were taking all that money they got from the banks in New York City and took it over to Russia to overthrow the Tsar. Yeah. So, banks are always involved in money-making because of war and whatever you call it, terrorism or whatever it is. Banks are always involved. And the drug war, hell yes, they don't care. The only, you know, sometimes the government is forced with red face to clamp down on them a little, but this is, a good unconventional warfare person's got to get his money somewhere, but the problem is if I went down to get a loan to somehow form a revolutionary cadre and start attacking in this country, I don't think that they'd give me many loans. But if you're a rag-headed guy, man, with good credentials, and you could probably get all the loans you want from American banks because they have no allegiance to your country or to your city or to your state. Their allegiance is to predatory capitalism. Always was, always will be. Oh my God. Member of the Nebraska School Board called on to resign after he called Obama a half-breed. Whoa, man. Well, he is a half-breed. Don't let the truth get in your way. A member of Nebraska's school board is being called on to resign after making racially inflammatory remarks about President Obama. Don't ever tell the truth, boy. The truth gets you in trouble. Pat McPherson's blog included repeated references to President Barack Obama as a half-breed. McPherson, however, said he didn't write the post and expressed his disapproval before deleting them. Oh, yes, always back down, Americans, white Americans. Always back down, chicken shit. Concerned citizens have called in to complain about McPherson's comments. That's why this country is called snitch country. Snitch culture. Everybody going to tell a teacher on somebody, man. Causing the board to issue a resolution confirming that the board, the rest of the whiteys, deplores racism in all forms and expects respect and civility to be shown to all people, including the President of the United States. Quote, I don't think people by and large feel comfortable with that type of a blog and that individual making decisions for school children. Oh, my God. Obama's Omaha City Councilman Ben Gray told KETV. Wow. The roof's falling in. They said that Obama is a half-breed. Oh, God. It'll never end. Well, we have a guest this morning here. It is a young black woman commenting about black men as dogs. Let's tune her in here.
Hey, I'm Marvelous, and I have another marvelous rant and rave that I want to do. Well, I just want to get something off my chest. It's crazy because I just got two phone calls from two different friends that don't know each other talking about nearly the exact same thing. Men. Yes, we women, we talk about you guys all the time. And they were calling, complaining, talking about they don't have a man for the holidays and they're alone and they gotta figure out what to do. And I'm sitting on the other line like, this might not be a bad thing because in my eyes, you're saving money because you don't have to buy that person a Christmas gift. Okay, I'm sorry, that's just me being cheap. But what I want to talk about is the reason why they're complaining. You're complaining saying that these men are dogs. Okay, well, My thing about that is stop going to the same dog pound looking for another mutt to take care of. You study dating the same type of guy. Why don't you just go outside your horizons? Now, my girls sometimes feel like maybe I'm a little too harsh when I speak to them about these things, but I have no choice but to be honest with them and let them know exactly how I feel. Because they're always calling me, which I don't understand that because I'm single and I give single people advice, and seeing that I am single, I promote breakups. So why would you come? Okay, that's another thing. But again, if you feel like all men are dogs, or maybe it's just the men that you date are the dogs. Okay, if you try a different type of guy, or maybe a different type of approach, not saying to change who you are, but sometimes you might have to tweak yourself a little bit. Just like in a relationship, both of you have to tweak yourselves a little bit just to be with each other, just to tolerate each other, and to love each other eventually. Maybe, I don't know, I'm not the advocate for love at first sight, but still. And I feel like if you're constantly saying and believing in your mind that all men are dogs, then that's exactly what you're going to attract. And let's just say, men, you are dogs. Let's just say that. Okay. Last time I checked, dogs have a keen sense of smell. And if you're desperate in any type of way to get a boyfriend or a husband or money from the guy, then he sniffs that. He sniffs that. He smells that from you. So I just feel like if the man is a dog, then he knows all about you already. So just go ahead and be yourself and just let it all out in the open. Let it all out in the beginning. Let's save everybody some time and save me some headache, because I am about tired of, I love my girls. Y'all get on my nerve though. So maybe this will help you out just a little bit. When I tell you, please date outside the box. You've been dating the same type of guy. Just go outside the box a little bit. It's okay. It's all right. There'll be another one waiting for you. Like they say, it's more fish in the sea. The men say that about you. Hey, I say that about the guys. More fish in the sea. Another marvelous rant. I hit you back with another one. Holler.
There you go. That's from our black commentator, black female commentator, talking about going to the pound and picking up men dogs. And you turn one in and you come back and you get another puppy you got to take care of. And then on the other side, the man smells you. You smell. And he's got you figured out, man. So you black girls, heed my story here. Well, biologist E.O. Wilson, who is known as the father of sociobiology, said recently that the earth was suffering the death of 1,000 cuts because of religion. In the most recent issue of The New Scientist, Wilson explained that his next book would look at the future of men, humans on Earth. The Pulitzer Prize-winning biologist warned that people had not yet realized that the tribal structure had been destroying the planet by 1,000 cuts, according to a partial transcript obtained by the International Business News. Quote, all ideologies and religions have their own answers for the big questions, but these are usually bound as dogma in some kind of tribe, he said. Religions in particular feature supernatural elements that other tribes, other faiths cannot accept. And every tribe, no matter how generous, benign, loving, and charitable, nonetheless looks down on all other tribes. What's dragging us down is religious faith. Humans everywhere have a strong tendency to wonder about whether they're being looked over by a god or not. Practically every person ponders whether they're going to have another life, Wilson continued. These are the things that unite humanity. But he said that the transcendent searching has been hijacked by tribal religions. So I would say, for the sake of human progress, the best thing we could possibly do would be to diminish to the point of eliminating religious faith. But certainly not eliminating the natural yearnings of our species or the asking of these great questions. Wilson, who was raised as a Baptist in Alabama, He said that he drifted away from Christianity, but he doesn't refer to himself as an atheist. I'm a scientist, he told the magazine. We need to replace faith with evidence. We need evidence. And if we went more by that rule of thumb, we'd be a lot better off as a white race. Well, the debate goes on about the American sniper. I think you know my opinion. Let's listen to another opinion here. Or maybe it's the same as mine.
I'm Alan Combs. Welcome to our show. Let me introduce Ross Caputi, a Iraq War veteran, who has been very vocal about the movie American Sniper. Ross, welcome to the show. What got you started in talking about this movie and Chris Kyle to begin with?
Well, when I first heard that it was being, his autobiography was being adapted into a film, I decided I wanted to write something about it because, you know, I've been doing activism surrounding the issues that people in Fallujah are facing for a few years now, and I knew that Chris Kyle was part of the second siege of Fallujah, so, you know, I wanted to write something, in that vein.
Did you know Chris Kyle?
No, never met him.
What did you think of the film? Did you see it?
As just like a war movie, as like a film of that particular genre, I honestly didn't think it was very good.
Why not?
In terms of just like plot structure and storyline, I thought it was a bit confusing. It jumped around, you know, quite a bit. I didn't think it really built a strong narrative.
Did you read his book?
I read the autobiography.
What did you think of that?
Very typical of, you know, your veteran memoirs, you know, all these veterans returning from Iraq, many of them are writing memoirs, and it reflects all the typical beliefs that, you know, veterans believe about their experience. It reflects that, you know, that subjective perspective that most veterans have. It also kind of reflects the language that we use, which at times was very racist, and a lot of people have jumped all over Chris Kyle about that. It's, in fact, a pretty typical thing. You know, that was just sort of the moral climate that existed in Iraq while we were there. So, I mean, I didn't think it was a very insightful autobiography, but it's typical of the genre.
You don't believe that Chris Kyle is a hero?
No, I don't believe he's a hero.
Why is
but
that?
That's not a statement focused at Chris Kyle as an individual. I don't believe that any veteran who participated in invasion or...
Yeah, I've read what you've written. Let's be clear. You're not just talking about Chris Kyle, and you yourself say you participated in some of the same firefights. You did some of the same things he did, and that none of you are heroes.
True.
Why do you say that?
Because our invasion of Iraq was in violation of international law. We did not have the UN Security Council's approval for invading Iraq, and also our occupation was imposed on Iraqis. It was not something that they wanted. Instead, it was something that we forced upon them and really didn't give them any say in it at all. So I feel that our mission in Iraq was illegitimate according to international law, and it was also very immoral. So for those reasons, I don't think that we're here.
If you had to do it all over again, would you have gone? Would you have enlisted?
No, I wouldn't have.
You wouldn't have?
No.
This hagiography that's going on now about, you know, what a great guy he was and what a hero... And anybody who objects to this, God forbid you say something like Michael Moore said, or Seth Rogen, and you're raked over the coals on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, that you're not even allowed to have another opinion about this.
Yeah, at first I was very happy to see that there was such a loud debate about this film, but then I started to see exactly how polarized the debate had become, and really kind of how... hysterical and shrill that it become, and at this point I think it's just counterproductive. It's just further polarizing people, and it's not creating a broader understanding of about the occupation of Iraq or about what veterans go through or about what Iraqis go through. At this point I think the whole debate has just become really emotional.
What is what you refer to as the hidden side of American war culture?
The fact that we choose not to look at how our military operations around the world affect the civilians where those operations are taking place. The fact that all of this is omitted from Chris Kyle's autobiography and also from the adaptation, the film. And nobody questions it. It's just that that's considered okay. And it's really egregious if you understand exactly how much Iraqis have suffered because of the war, because of the occupation, particularly the second siege of Fallujah, which, as I point out in my critique of the film, that's where Chris Kyle built his reputation as a sniper. Fallujans suffered a tremendous amount because of our operation in their city. But that, there's not even a hint of that in either the autobiography or the film.
You say, and you actually put yourself in the same category, that Chris Kyle, rather than a hero, is a killer.
I didn't intend to say that so much in my autobiography. It is true that both him and I have taken life, but I think it's incredibly difficult to blame soldiers as individuals. I believe in this might be a little overly philosophical, but I believe in something called collective responsibility.
Right.
I think, you know, you can't point to any one individual in the U.S. military or on the civilian side of the leadership that you can hold responsible for the second siege of Fallujah. We all played a role in it. Arguably, even the civilians in this country who their tax dollars went towards, you know, creating the bullets and shipping them to Iraq and putting them in me and Chris Kyle's
hands. Voting for people who make decisions to send people to war.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I think, you know, a little bit of blame falls on all of us. But you also have to question how much agency each one of us had on the ground.
Well, anyhow, that's enough of that nonsense. Of course, he's a killer is a killer. A killer is one who kills. Now, you can say, put another word or two in front of it, say what kind of a killer, but you're trained to kill in the military, like I was trained to kill. And if I had come upon a situation where I was ordered to kill, I would have killed. And that's the problem, this military-industrial complex that's reeking with tax money. And they're getting, their budget this year was $750 billion. And this American exceptionalism, then they call it, have the nerve to call it racism. They're perverting what racism really is, and racism is simply people or person who wants to protect and preserve his family and his race. That's it. When you use it beyond that, like they were here and a lot of newsmen do, it is that you hate them for the racial background, you know, but you've invaded their country. They have every right in the world to kill you dead, shoot you in the head, or whatever it takes. Now, in Fallujah, they used depleted uranium, which now they have hundreds of people in that town that are having babies with two heads and everything goes along with nuclear waste. And of course it's all over the Middle East. It's going to be there forever. So anyhow, no white racist I know who is a true white racist is into going into a country like that that did not provoke us, did not attack us, and doing these horrible things that are being done in the name of you, and then they turn around and call them white racist. Well, these are not white racist technically. They're just pawns of the military-industrial complex, period. End of story. Well, they got a little more controversy here. There's a controversial video game simulating a killing spree has come under fire for its extremely graphic content. You know, You'd think that we created this thing, you know, but all of these games, kill everybody games, they're not created by Tom Metzger, anybody who works for Tom Metzger. But that's okay. People make lots of money, but if we say we think white people ought to take care of themselves, then that is the most horrible game you could play. Yeah, it's so anyhow, a controversial video game simulating a killing spree has come after under fire for its extremely graphic content. The game called Hatred holds the dubious distinction of being second only game to receive an adults only rating for extreme violence. What do you mean that car theft 101, and they didn't get that. This is not surprising, considering the aim of the game is to massacre as many people as possible in a genocide crusade. Well, that's reality. It's called the American military-industrial complex, tied in with the British, the French, the Germans, and a whole lot of other people. So what's new? They've all been on a true genocidal crusade. Making matters worse, the game's main character is a psychopathic goth dressed in long black trench coat. Oh, boy. All too similar to the same outfit worn by the Columbine killers, who, what did they kill, a dozen or so people, while the U.S. Marine Corps and so forth are killing hundreds of thousands? And we'll look at World War II with the pattered bombing on both sides. It's amazing. In a bold move, the game's developers have been outspoken on their website about the rating. So I guess you can go to hatred.com, the game, and find out. Let's listen in on a little bit of it.
My name is not important. What is important is what I'm going to do. I just fucking hate this world and these human worms feasting on its carcass. My whole life is just cold, bitter hatred. And I always wanted to die violently. This is the time of vengeance, and no life is worth saving. And I will put in the grave as many as I can. It's time for me to kill. And it's time for me to die. My genocide crusade begins here.
Go. Hatred. What do they say here? Hatred.com. Extremehatred.com. Something like that. So you can find it. And the video to it is pretty graphic. I would say very graphic, man. But they blame us for talking about fighting for our race. And guys are making hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe millions of dollars. And probably a whole lot of people put these violent games together are, you guessed it, Jewish. Well, let's get a little more comment on that, okay?
What's up, ladies and gentlemen of YouTube? Boogie2988 coming at you live once again through the power of the internet. And man, am I a little frustrated to have to report this. So, for those of you who are unaware, there's a video game by the name of Hatred. And this game features a main character who has decided that the world has to pay for all of their evil ways or whatever, and decides to go on a rampage in which he does basically indiscriminate killing of pets and animals and men and children and cats and dogs and all kinds of crazy stuff. And I made a video about this game when it premiered a couple of months back when the trailer went viral. I talked about the fact that it didn't seem like the kind of game that I would ever want to play personally, but that I felt that this game was important, and that I felt that the freedom of speech that protects a game like this is absurdly important. Well, today, we've seen that freedom of speech being stomped on by the folks at Valve, who produce the PC gaming distribution system known as Steam. And Steam is really important for indie developers or even AAA developers as a distribution system for their video games. If you get pulled off of Steam, or if you're not able to get onto Steam, chances of you selling your game is next to zero. So to see these guys get their game pulled off of Steam means Basically, they're going to generate a fraction of the cells that they would have originally generated. Now, people who hate this game are going to say something along the lines of, this is a video game that's ultra-violent, and it doesn't belong on a distribution system like Steam, and that's why they chose to pull it. Except, let's remember that Postal 1 and Postal 2 are still on Steam, and we're just about to release Grand Theft Auto 5 on Steam, and let's remind you that one of the characters, Trevor, is a certifiable psycho in that game. He does things that are just as bad as anything hatred could have possibly produced. So it's a bit of a double standard. You might be thinking that Steam is just caving to popular opinion, but that's not the case either here, because it was up on Steam Greenlight today for just over 6 hours, and in those 6 hours it reached number 7 on the Greenlight board, getting 13,000 votes to approve it, with only 1,000 against it. That's a 93% approval rating, which is excellent for any game submitted to Steam Greenlight. So a spokesperson for Valve, Doug Lombardi, told the guys who were making the game that, based on what we've seen on Greenlight, we would not publish Hatred on Steam. As such, we will be taking it down. And that is just balls-out censorship. Now let me interject my personal opinion here real quick. I don't like Hatred. I don't like the premise of the game, and I had no intention of ever playing it. But I think removing it from Steam is absolutely absurd. There are a group of people out there who think that violent video games make people violent, even though there are studies and insurmountable evidence that prove otherwise. In fact, the exact opposite is true. But they hold on to this myth, they hold on to this idea as some sort of oppressive tool to try to remove video games from the marketplace. And we've seen this with them removing Grand Theft Auto V from the marketplace, and now Hatred is removed on a global scale. It's disgraceful that the people who believe that stuff have peer-pressured Steam into removing this game, or even worse, that there are people at Steam who are stupid enough to believe that line of bullshit. Now, at the end of the day, Steam determines what they are going to distribute and sell, and it's up to them, and there's literally nothing we can do about it. Steam makes that decision, and that's their right. And there's nothing we can do to infringe upon it, even if I wanted to. It's just crazy disappointing that Steam did not choose to stand up for freedom of speech here, because they know this game is controversial, they know a lot of people love to hate on it, and they're afraid to publish it, they don't want to be connected to it in any way. And that's frustrating, because libraries all across America cover violent books and carry controversial books like Lolita or Stephen King's Rage, which is about a school shooting, by the way. Or Netflix is brave enough to carry a movie like The Human Centipede 2, which is disgustingly ultra-violent. And YouTube is willing to go to bat and into court in order to defend people's right to freedom of expression with absurdly violent and disgusting and over-sexualized videos in some cases. And we need that in video games, because video games is a storytelling medium like any other. And for some reason, when it comes to bloggers and the media and old people, they're confused about what they mean and what they are. But I can tell you what they are. They're an expression medium, they're a storytelling medium that is just like any other in history. And the right to express yourself through a video game is one that absolutely needs protection. And I wish that Steam had chosen to protect it here.
Well, if you're a gamer, what do you think? You know, the U.S. military uses these games to train soldiers and pilots to kill people. And I say let it all hang out, especially all the footage taken on the battlefield and the killing fields of Middle East and any place else. Uncut should be on American television every day, every night. Absolutely. Let them show these people what their tax money's doing. You're worried about games? Games? Are you kidding? The real game is right out of Washington, D.C., the most violent game that's ever been. Yeah. Well, should this happen more often? A former Fox television station's employee shot himself in the chest outside the News Corporation building on Monday. Philip Perea, a 41-year-old man who previously worked at Fox station in Austin, Texas, had been handing out flyers that criticized Fox Television for ending his career moments before he shot himself, according to the Wall Street Journal. Earlier on Monday, Perea had written a series of tweets and published a YouTube video in which he criticized Fox for ruining his life. Well, Fox has ruined a hell of a lot of lives because they're so pro-war. What gets me is these good-looking women they've got on there, like on the Five, pulling their dresses clear up to their ass, and they're bigger war hawks than the men. Bomb them, kill them. Yeah, man, it's okay. Perea was found Monday morning outside the News Corporation building in Midtown Manhattan with a small caliber pistol lying next to him. He was taken to Bellevue Hospital in critical condition. Well, when Fox TV people start shooting themselves, I think that's a good thing. I think that because they're nothing but a whore for the military-industrial complex and the National Republican Party Committee. Yeah. And they can do that over at MSNBC, too, if they'd like. And let Brother Al get upset. Yeah. Well, anyhow, that's the way I feel about it. Whenever these lousy whores that work for these outfits and spew the crap they do, well, you might want to hope they do something like that to themselves. Boy, this is really stretching it. The conservative watchdog group Judicial Watch has obtained a 2013 affidavit from the Washington Metropolitan Police Department requesting an arrest warrant for former Meet the Press host David Gregory on the grounds that he committed a gun law violation when he displayed a gun magazine on his show. Talk about radical. The affidavit in support of an arrest warrant confirms that D.C. Detective Wayne Garish believed there was probable cause that Mr. Gregory had committed a crime and requested an arrest warrant for Gregory, unquote. Judicial Watch wrote in a press release, quote, despite the detailed request, Andrew Foyce, D.C. Deputy Attorney General for Public Safety, declined to issue the warrant. Well, they could get a conviction for a guy holding up a gun magazine unless we've gone totally over the hill. Hey, all you lone wolf guys out there, attention, man. Men accused of date rape will need to convince police that a woman consented to sex as part of a major change in the way sex offenses are investigated. Well, hell, the only way I know you do that, you'd have to carry a miniature tape recorder in your pocket. And then ask her if she says yes. The director of public prosecution said it was time for the legal system to move beyond the concept of no means no to recognize situations where women may have been unable to give consent. Alan Saunders said rape victims should no longer be blamed by society if they are too drunk to consent to sex, or if they simply freeze and say nothing because they are terrified of their attackers. Instead, the police and prosecutors must now put a greater onus on rape suspects to demonstrate how the complainant had consented with full capacity and freedom to do so. Well, I'm glad I'm not running around looking for chicks. I'll tell you, you have to have always with you a small tape recorder and when all this stuff goes down, you just turn it on. And then you'll have proof to save your ass. Otherwise, boy, I'll tell you, you are a sitting duck, boys. And, of course, instead of pointing out how many rapes of white women are of blacks, violent rape, and going really heavy, heavy after them, they shifted over onto white guys. They don't say it, but you know what I'm talking about. This whore, Angela Merkel of Germany, who has repeatedly warned of renewed anti-Jewism in Europe, will visit a synagogue in Budapest and discuss political issues, including racism, while on a visit to Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban next Monday. The Chancellor's spokesman, Stefan Siebert, said on Wednesday that the two leaders would discuss bilateral and European matters, but added that domestic political developments in Hungary are always on the agenda when the chancellor meets with Mr. Orbán. Hungary's far-right Jobbik Party, which espouses a Hungarian's first policy, largely directed against the Roma minority, has become the second most popular party in the country in the past decade, after Orbán's center-right Fidesz, although Jobbik leaders have softened anti-Jew rhetoric and now avoid expressing such sentiments explicitly. The party's rise is seen as having allowed the breakdown of taboos surrounding anti-Jewism. The risk of xenophobia has to be recognized wherever it exists in Europe and repudiated everywhere in Europe. And that counts for Germany, as in other European Union countries, said Siebert. The fact that a group that won almost 20% of the last election certainly contains xenophobic elements as to be a cause of concern, he said. Well, that's too bad you're so concerned. I don't think you're going to stop it. Ms. Merkel is acting more and more like a jerkle. Well, this is interesting. In Greece, in his first act as prime minister on Monday, Alexei Tsipras visited the war memorial in Kasarina, where 200 Greek resistance fighters were slaughtered by the Germans in 1944. The move did not go unnoticed in Berlin, nor did Tsipras' decision hours later to receive the Russian ambassador before meeting any other foreign official. Then came the announcement that radical academic Yanis Varoufakis, who once likened German austerity policies to fiscal waterboarding, would be taking over as Greek finance minister. A short while later, Tsipras delivered another blow, criticizing an EU statement that warned Moscow of new sanctions. Well, I think he's going in the right direction. And for those out there that are Hitler worshippers, let's face it, Greece was invaded, like many other countries, by the Germans. And people who resisted that invasion were rounded up and shot. And that's not right. It is not right, no matter who did it. And so right at this moment, it looks like the left-leaning leader, the new leader of the country, of Greece, is going the right direction. We'll have to watch him. Now, what's Washington going to do about Golden Dawn? They may come out and finance them. No, you don't have to worry about that. I was in the American Independent Party, and which was a third party, and we worked our ass off and ran all over and gave speeches and everything else, but it never got to first base. Don't worry about Golden Dawn. Unless the CIA totally bankrolls them, they're not going anywhere. Sorry, boys. Well, you see, Obama's going to give more equipment and so forth to India, atomic stuff, more dangerous power plants. Now, to put all this atomic energy in these countries like our government has done, really not my government, is suicide. It's like playing Russian roulette, because they're right on the border of China. There could be a flare-up at any time. Now, one of these days, you idiots, they're going to use these atomic weapons. Then, once it starts, where's it going to end? And all, both parties have supported selling or giving atomic energy to these third-world countries, and they haven't put restrictions on them, any really tight restrictions. The only country that they have is Iran. This is an interesting story told on the radio, but hold your applause to the last little bit of the conversation.
So, hello, Jay.
Hello, Paul.
What's happening?
Oh, not much. Hey, on the conversation Monday, I enjoyed it, by the way.
Thank you.
I got a little tale of my own. Paul, I grew up in Alabama and was raised as a racist.
Were you?
And I was very proud of it. My father was in the KKK. All my uncles were. But in 1967, I joined the Marine Corps. I considered myself strong, brave, and stupid, so I wanted to go to Vietnam, and I got my wish. First day there, as big a redneck as I was, I met probably the most militant acting and talking black person that was ever on the face of the earth. Less than an hour after we met, we tried to kill each other. And we tried to kill each other for the next couple of weeks, about every day, till our gunny sergeant took us aside and said, next time that happens, you're going home on a bad conduct discharge. So we put aside our differences and turned out to be fair soldiers. We still had strong animosity, but over the next 2 years, he saved my life a couple of times. I saved his a couple of times. And we didn't, either one of us, want to leave Vietnam. We spent 22 of 24 months, 1967-69, there. 2 months we were being treated in the Philippines. But in 69, we both had to leave. And I moved back to Alabama and went to school. He moved back to Detroit and resumed his ways. After I got out of college, as dumb as I was, I managed to get an engineering degree. And I talked to him a few times over those years. We had become, I guess you could call, friends. And he was not having it too good in Detroit, and I said, well, come on down here, and you can go to work for the same company I am. So he did, and he wound up working for me.
Wow.
And he decided he'd go to school and get his degree, which he did. And he decided he wanted to outdo me, which he always did. He went on and got his master's degree, and I wound up working for him. And 32 years ago, come April 3rd of this year, Paul, I will have been married to his sister for 32 years.
Wow.
We both had...
so now you're working for her.
Yeah. He was the best man at my wedding.
That's incredible. That's an incredible story.
We had two sons apiece. All four of them graduated from the University of Alabama. And
anybody ever tell you this would be a good book?
Yeah, probably would be. Nobody would believe it.
This would be a great book and movie.
But we've had a good life, and he lives about three houses down now, and we still try to lie as much as we can about our war exploits. But that just goes to prove, Paul, that anything can happen to a former racist. You never know.
That really is an incredible story.
All I can say to that is a typical white dummy. They have the idea that if you're supposed to hate all these people, just hate them automatically, when you just want racial separation. And so when he didn't find that he was hating the guy, all of a sudden he becomes his buddy, and then he marries his black sister and has half black kids. Oh, duh. Here's the typical attitude of the many of these black killers roaming the streets. A recent homicide in Kansas City has the community upset, and the mother of the victim fuming. A 14-year-old girl was assaulted and murdered at a Kansas City water park this week, with the three black suspects appearing in court for the first time. The victim's mother is not only hurt to see the loss of her daughter, She's also appalled at the attitude of the young nigger men who are accused of killing her. According to the mother of the victim, the men in court showed no remorse, and one of them even seemed to smirk at her after the homicides. Quote, I didn't see any remorse on the guys' faces, which made it even harder for me and my family, said LaShonda Kane. Kane's daughter, Alex, was allegedly killed by the three men after agreeing to meet with them at the park. Kane is most angry that the young men seemed almost glad to have killed the innocent young child. That was pretty hard to deal with. I don't see how he thought it was funny. Well, that's the nature of the bastards. I mean, these people, that's the nature of the bastards. I see it all. I see a lot of Negroes or whatever you want to call them appear in court. And they've got a, they smile about it, laugh about it. That's the nature of the beast, boys and girls. Well, let's compare fighting styles, boys and girls. If you compare the way in which different sexes fight their opponents, at least in regards to street fighting, females take a more unconventional approach to fighting their opponents, a way in which most men don't usually choose. Much of this is due to strength, as men tend to throw a series of punches in hopes of disabling their opponent before beating them into submission. They use only their fists and their bodies, relying primarily on upper body strength. Women, on the other hand, look to hurt their opponent in a wide variety of ways, from the punching, to the kicking, to the scratching, to the hair pulling, to the twisting, all in hopes of hurting their opponents as much as possible. In short, the online videos of untrained women street fighting is lawless and intense, whereas men's street fighting is actually a bit more measured, though often more damaging. History has shown that the female fighters on the battlefield are often some of the most fearsome and ruthless. The woman who fought for the Soviet Red Army, the women who did, wouldn't take prisoners, executing every German soldier that surrendered to them over the course of the brutal Eastern Front during the Second World War. In fact, every war that women have fought in during the 20th and 21st century have resulted in numerous remarkable stories of bravery, proving that mentally women are just as capable as of men in the fog of war, even though if they are generally considered to not be as physically as strong or fast. Since women are being considered more and more equal in society and working hard to level the playing field on other fronts, it only makes sense that fighting between females would become more popular. Humans are drawn to fighting regardless of who is doing it. Seeing two animals, people, teams, even robots go at it is just our nature. This has been the case over the course of human history and has nothing to do with people being desensitized to violence. People are drawn to violence like moths to a flame, no matter who is involved. Perhaps there is just something instinctually comforting to us about it. So considering there is a renewed draw to the sport of mixed martial arts and organizations like the Ultimate Fighting Championship, it only makes sense that the sport and subsequent business surrounding fighting would expand into matches between women. There is now a whole portion of MMA and UFC dedicated to female fighters who actually are learning the art and craft of fighting an opponent in a traditional way. There's an evolution here, exploring not only how different individuals choose to fight their opponents, but also how different sexes choose to fight their opponents. Keeping in mind that due to the fact that it isn't in women's nature to immediately beat up someone who crosses them or disagrees with them, as well as the fact that they weren't encouraged to fight or were heavily reprimanded for fighting in the past, fighting amongst females is a regulated environment may take some time to evolve. Leagues need to establish, many female fighters need to go through the process of learning and actually fighting before the fights will truly come into their own. Compare it to soccer in the United States versus the rest of the world. While everyone else is playing soccer from a very early age, just about every day of their lives for most of the century. Americans didn't really integrate the sport into their society until the last few decades. It is only now that soccer is actually getting some traction in the United States, and Americans are able to at least perform with other great teams on the world stage. The same can be said about female fighters. Now the women are being allowed to fight, and it is openly acceptable by society. Their participation in the sport of fighting will have to evolve, and grow, just as their integration into the military has evolved and grown over the past decade. It's also a testament to our evolution as human beings, whether it's men or women, that we are treating each other more equally, regardless of sex. Interesting. So maybe men should learn to fight like women. I mean, let's put it, their idea is to hurt. And if you hurt them, then you can drop them easier instead of going for the one punch like most guys do, that they stand there and they try for one punch and usually don't get it, and it goes on and ends up just wrestling on the ground. But maybe the women have something here, that they're learning to hurt their quarry first of all, and not get that one punch in to knock them out. And maybe it would be, pardon me, more fun. Anyhow, it's something to think about, and it's also quite interesting about the Soviet female soldiers that wouldn't take surrender from a German male soldier. It killed them all. I didn't know that. Well, to be fair about it, Russia was invaded, and they did whatever they had to do to defend themselves. And if we were invaded, or my state was invaded, or my town was invaded, I'm sure I would be very brutal and bestial towards the people who were invading it. And that's something that the right wing and the Hollywood Nazis never seem to understand. Russia lost probably 28 million. They say 20 million. I think about 28 million, plus all the people they lost from the Stalin's people. So they know it's tough. And they're still gathering the bones from World War II all over Russia. They find them laying on top of the ground in the woods and the forests. Well, let's tune in to Jimmy Hightower here and see what he's going to say on our show right here.
Jamie is PO'd. He's fed up with all this populistic attitude that's sweeping the country, and he's not going to take it anymore. Jamie Dimon recently bleated to reporters that, quote, banks are under assault. Well, not most banks, but J.P. Morgan Chase, America's largest Wall Street empire, which Jamie heads. Government regulators, he snarls, are pandering to grassroots populist anger at Wall Street excesses by squeezing the life out of his banking casino. But wait, didn't J.P. Morgan score a $22 billion profit last year, the highest in its history? And didn't those big, bad, oppressive government regulators provide a $25 billion taxpayer bailout in 2008 to save Jamie's conglomerate from its own reckless excesses? And isn't this Wall Street popinjay raking in some $20 million in personal pay to suffer the indignity of this so-called assault on his bank? Yes, yes, and yes. Still, Jamie says that regulators are piling on J.P. Morgan Chase. In the old days, he whined, you dealt with one regulator when you had an issue. Now it's five or six. You should all ask the question about how American that is, the $20 million a year man lectured to reporters, how fair that is. Well, golly, one reason Chase has half a dozen regulators on his case is because it doesn't have, quote, an issue of illegality, but beaucoup illegalities, including deceiving its own investors, cheating more than 2 million of its credit card customers, gaming the rules to overcharge electricity users in California and the Midwest, overcharging active duty military families on their mortgages, illegally foreclosing on troubled homeowners, and, well, so much more. This is Jim Hightower saying, so Jamie, ask yourself, how fair is all of the above? Then you should shut up and be grateful you're not in jail.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hightower. You know how to put it to him. That Jamie, he is one of the worst rats up there. And, boy, I know our buddy Max Kaiser keeps talking about him all the time at being behind that 2008 collapse. This guy should have been tried and hung or given 100 years in prison a long time ago. But you know it's not going to happen because they can buy their way out of anything. Jamie Dimon? Dimon. Is he? Or ain't he? I think he is. Well, that's it, boys and girls. Another exciting day on in the news. I'll be back tomorrow on... This is Thursday, isn't it? Yeah, it's Thursday. I had to look at my Frank Silva Memorial clock over here. And so I'll be back tomorrow on Thursday, and that'll be the 30th of January, 2015. And in the meantime, if they come to your door and they knock, don't open the door. Talk through a crack in the door or something like that, or talk loud. Say, what do you want? We're with the FBI. We're with the Homeland Security. Can we come in? Nope. Do you have a warrant? Nope. Then get out of here. Goodbye. So long. But we'd like for you to come down to the office at the station and talk to us, because there's something's happening, and we know you didn't have anything to do with it, but we want to ask you some questions about somebody you might know. Sorry, no. You mean you won't get in the car and go with us down there to the interrogation room? No, get out of here. 14 words, 5 words, I have nothing to say. Have a nice day, boys.
There ain't no man gonna invade my territory. There ain't no I'm big and hard and battle scarred and getting long in the tooth. Desperate and hungry and got nothing to lose. Yeah, I'm a lone wolf. I've been chased and I've been bit. Yeah, I'm a lone wolf. They like to shoot at me, but they miss. Yeah, I'm a ain't never been trapped, and God help the people that think they got me cornered at last. I've been hunting, I've been tracking, I've been running since I was 3. Born in Louisiana swamp, moved with the pack to Tennessee. Raised by black and white dogs to some country, some rock and roll. They said, now boy, you're gonna have to quit your howling soul. Staying up all night and chasing lassies by the moon. Laying up all day on the porch playing guitar tunes. Yeah, I'm a lone wolf, and I no longer run with the pack. Yeah, I'm a lone wolf, and I don't ever look back. Yeah, I'm a lone wolf out here on the prowl. Most of us have been penned up.
come.